Optometrist.
What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus. What's up, Jen? How are you doing today?
Hey, everybody. We're so excited to be here. If you guys have been following us on social, you know this is a topic that I've been really excited to talk about. So I feel like we've had it in the works. Dr. Boucher, we talked about this like a month ago, and I've been eagerly awaiting actually get to talk to you about this in person and share it with everyone else. So Dr. Boucher has done an amazing job creating a brand new service initiative. And this all came up during COVID while the rest of us were just trying to get our lives in order. She put her time off to good use to actually serve our communities. And the name of the initiative is called In Her Vision. Have you ever heard of that before where you're like, it's right on the tip of your tongue and it's like right out the excitement, like made my a bubble pop in my brain. I'll blame that on Parenthood as well.
Jen, I get that way every day in the exam room. I get so excited to tell someone about what I'm going to prescribe for them. And I'm like, oh man, I just had a brain fart. They're like, Dr. Glover, you're about to tell me that I need an anti-reflective coating blue light protection as well. The same thing you tell me every year. I'm like, well, hey, you can take my job. I don't need to be here today.
But In Her Vision is an amazing initiative, raising awareness about domestic violence and abuse, and then how we can better serve their eye care needs in our community. Because without realizing it, you guys, we're seeing these people in our exam chairs, and a lot of times we're one of the first lines of interaction that they might be having, not only to get the care they need for their eyes, but the care they need to improve their entire lives. So we could be that bridge to improving things for the entire family in this situation. And so Dr. Boucher, I'd love to kind of introduce you and let you share a little bit about yourself, because it's such amazing work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you both for having me on your amazing show. This is really exciting. So I have been practicing optometry in the state of North Carolina for 23 years and had gotten to a point in my career where probably after the first 10 years, it started to gnaw at me that there was something else that I really needed to be doing. And I have always really been focused and connected with women's empowerment and really serving especially girls, young girls, and women in terms of truly finding their voice. And so what I ended up doing, because we are partnered, we are doctors next to lens crafters, and so we have the privilege of participating with One Sight when it was Gift of Sight, and then it became One Sight. And so I started to do these clinics, and once you do them, they always say, it's like you get the bug. And I finally got the aha moment that, wow, this is really what I personally value about the work that I do. That yes, seeing patients on a day-to-day in the practice is lovely, but really what fulfills my heart and my soul is to really serve communities that really lack access to eye care. And so that was really the kind of, so to speak, the start of the dream is partaking in One Sight. And having done about 12 clinics and having run a clinic as a lead doc, I really got a lot of insight in terms of how to really truly make a mobile eye exam happen. So that was pretty awesome.
Well, Jen, one thing that I just want to bring to the table, ever since we first met, we actually sit together on the North Carolina Optometric Society Diversity and Inclusion Committee. And just the conversation, dialogue within that committee, and just, you can just tell someone's heart is genuine and just pure, just the conversation and the dialogue that takes place. And since day one, I've always experienced that. And I didn't even know that we were gonna have this interview today. And I'm sitting on a committee with you, and I'm talking to Jen, and I'm just like, I know who that is. is. And she's like, yeah, you guys are the show committee. So I am super excited today. As I mentioned earlier, prior to this show even starting, I'm a student today. I have my pen, my paper. I want to be educated. I want the world to know about the amazing things that you're doing. And we want to learn more about this foundation and organization that you have going on as well. So I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything that you do, whether it's for optometry in North Carolina, because we're all North Carolina optometrists and we love our profession and we know it's a legislative profession and we know we want to make it greater or better. Yes. We want to increase diversity, but we also want to keep our patients number one and give them the best care. And Absolutely. Let's talk about it today. Let's dive deep into it.
So for me, as you had hinted at, Jen, COVID was truly a wonderful time, unfortunately, and yet fortunately, for me to spend some time. I think for a lot of us, we were home. And because the business was closed, I had a lot of time to spend figuring out what did I want the arc of my career to look like at this point of my life? Because, like I said, it just was not working out doing the 9 to 5, 5 days a week. And I am the clinical director of our 6 practices. And so that was very lovely and challenging. But I just needed a little bit more work that was soul driven and purpose driven. And so I started to just unpack all the things in my life that felt like they were hindering me in terms of really seeing the potential that's out there in terms of what I really wanted to do. And what are the skills that I have that come to me in this really natural way? I feel like I enjoy educating patients. I enjoy telling people why it matters to go get an eye exam, that it's not just about those lovely expensive glasses that you're wearing on your face. It truly is about how your eyes are working and what's happening internally health-wise. And then I thought about, then the connection was, okay, I have this skill. And then I really, really love doing service. And I really feel like we just don't have enough people out there taking care of our communities in need. And we provide one-sided eye exams in our locations, but rarely are they ever taken advantage of. And that felt really hard for me to accept as somebody who loves the program. And so, you know, we did the whole like community service and drumming up the beats and like getting people to come. But I realized access is really tough when you don't have transportation. So then I started to think about, wow, well, why not create a mobile eye exam? Like, I know how that works. I've done a clinic. I've attended 12. I've participated as a doc. I kind of know how it works. Why can't I do that? And so that's how In Her Vision was born. I literally spent COVID coming up with like a plan and really kind of got in touch with Dr. Rubel from our AOA, which is very lovely, and got to talk to her. And she was so jazzed. I was like, wow, okay, this is really a good idea. And then I talked to Dr. Rafferty for an hour, and I had his complete yes, this is wonderful. You're going to do comprehensive eye exams. You don't want to just do screenings. I'm like, nope, I don't want to do screenings. I don't think that that's where it's at. I think when we're talking about underserved communities who can't come and get an eye exam, we have to take our eye exams to them. So that's where we are. And so we are gearing up for that. And I hope everything falls into place and our funding comes in and we're able to access all the equipment that we need that's mobile and portable and get that going end of October, beginning November.
How did this particular community speak to you? Is there a personal story or something that made you want to get involved specifically?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I identify as a queer woman of color, and for me, as a immigrant to the United States, we did not have a very comfortable life. And I would have to say that I experienced poverty and sometimes uncertainty about home. And having experienced that, and also not having the access as a kid to have an eye exam and not being able to see in the third grade was really tough. And so this all are formative pieces in one's life. And so for me, what speaks to me is the homeless population. It is the underrepresented communities. It is the homeless LGBTQ and gender non-binary youth. So all of these people out there are being served, hopefully, by various nonprofits in our community. And there are multiple ones that I've basically connected with. And so we're working together in terms of trying to put together client lists or patient lists and determine dates so that we can get into those nonprofits and start doing these mobile eye exams, obviously with COVID safety guidelines in place, because that is pertinent. That's not going to go away. We have to deal with that and be safe taking care of everybody and us be safe doing these exams.
So. Well, I know the story. It's one thing, and a lot of people will, you know, have the passion for serving, right? And then they have an idea like, I want to serve my community. But then it's really hard for it to go from idea and passion to actual like fulfilled project. And that's a path that I know has been a lot of hard work for you. So could you share a little bit about what you had to do to actually make this an up and running, real true initiative that is serving patients?
That's such a good question. It's, you know, when something is a labor of love, when you are nurturing, and I'm going to make this analogy, I think that you might both understand. I'm a mother of a 20-year-old, so I've had a child, so I know what it's like to nurture a baby in your womb. It's almost like nurturing a baby that you love, that is your soul's work. And so you give it time, you are patient with it. And I know it sounds very like broad, but literally there would be times when I would be in this, I gotta go do that to get everything done. And it became overwhelming. And so I had to tell myself to stop, that if it starts to feel like a chore, I've lost my vision, that I need to always remember why I'm doing this. And so that has to come from a really centered space for me. And so I took one piece at a time, and I literally would spend a week and focus on three elements. And then I would spend another week and spend, you know, time on one or two elements. So I really had to start from scratch. Like, you know, I reached out to the nonprofits and made connections there. And so it was helpful because we had already established a connection with Families Moving Forward in downtown Durham, which is a families homeless shelter. And so I got in touch with them and let them know that this is what I wanted to do. Having been an immigrant, I got in touch with the Refugee Resettlement Services, and they're called Church World Services, and they're lovely. And so kind of got in touch with them to try to see their clients, and have reached out to Interact, which is the Raleigh women's shelter. And that really speaks to me, because that I think that if we're awake and if we're paying attention, the statistics don't lie. And if you're honest and truthful, you know that there are people that you know in your life that potentially have suffered some sort of domestic abuse. And so that really speaks a lot to me. And so therefore, reaching out to shelters that really help women was very, very important. So I just did that and made those connections first. And honestly, right now I'm at the phase where I am trying to really do the fundraising element of it, right? And start to purchase the equipment. And I'm so excited that we've actually been able to purchase like two pieces of equipment. I'm ready to roll. And and it's just, it's exciting. And I have to say that I've had a really lovely support from the Eye Center Doctors of Optometry, Dr. Naheed Kassam. He has been 100% on board. I'm like, can I borrow the BIO? Can I borrow the, you know, ophthalmoscope? I mean, and it's been like, sure. So it's just really great knowing that I also have that resource as well. Like, I don't have to purchase all the equipment at one time. So little bits and pieces come together to fit the puzzle.
This is just fantastic work. And, you know, I wanted to circle back on something that you touched on earlier, finding your reason why. You know, that is one thing that if you are watching or listening to this show right now and you haven't figured out your why, your purpose, you really need to dig deeper and figure it out. Because once you figure that out, you're free. You are free in life and you can do whatever you want and you can impact so many lives. But finding it can be a little difficult, and you can find that at any age. Some of us younger, some of us older, but once you figure it out, you can really change your life, but also change everyone around you as well. And just looking at you and just, again, having dialogue with you in the past, just, I know you found your why a long time ago. You're really changing the game for us, and we greatly appreciate all the work that you're doing. While we have you here today, I would love to just dive a little deeper into, you know, when patients come into the exam room and there may have been some type of domestic violence or some type of issue on a home front. What are some signs that we should look for, and how should we treat that situation? Because, you know, if it's, you know, just from a man's standpoint, you know, it's a difficult conversation to have, you know. It's like, inside, you may look at someone and you may feel like something is going on, but at the same time, today's society, you don't want to say too much because you feel like then, I don't know, you might get sued or something, or they may blast you on social media for something, or they may just say, no, what is wrong with you? Why are you asking me a question like that? So it's like, where is that ground where doctors can feel safe to ask a question, but also what are some of the signs that we're looking for as well?
Absolutely. I think that's a wonderful question. It's funny because Jen and I were having this conversation because I know that there's something that she's experienced in terms of her internship period of time that really still bugs her. And I think that as doctors, what's important for us to always remember is that we can't put our humanity aside. So it has to start from recognizing that when you see somebody who looks like potentially they have suffered some harm, it is totally within your duty as the person who is taking care of their eyes and their general well-being, essentially, right? Because we're asking them about their health. We're asking them about any trauma. We're asking these questions. And it's okay to really ask the question when you see a lacerated lid, when you see a black and blue eye, when you see a hyphema, when you see signs that really indicate, and you know in your gut that something's not right, that you say, how did this happen? Are you safe at home? Is there someone at home that's hurting you? Are you being threatened? And if the other person is in the room, you can simply ask the other person who's in the room that's not the patient, excuse me, but I'll need you to leave the room because this is now patient-doctor confidentiality and that we have to respect that.
Right.
And if the patient says, no, it's okay, then I think that if it's very serious, then you can say, well, I really do think it's important for us to do this exam in private.
Gotcha.
For the well-being of your, you know, your overall health. I think that, and it's okay to, I think it's okay for us to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think we need to feel discomfort because in discomfort, we can step up.
Yeah.
I actually think if there's one long-term thing from our COVID protocols that I'd like to see carry forward right now in our office policies, if you're an adult, you cannot have a guest in the exam room. The exam room is a very small space, and having more people in there right now is not obviously a great condition for a patient or a doctor. But long-term, I mean, having an extra adult in the room sometimes can stifle some of these conversations and make them more difficult to have. So I actually think even when COVID's over, we should strongly consider for patient privacy purposes, okay, you're an adult woman, your spouse, your boyfriend, he's not allowed back here. This is a private space.
Absolutely. I think right now COVID makes it easy for us to do that, right? We're like, listen, it's a tight room. We need to respect social distancing to be safe. It makes it, but I just think you're absolutely right. And I think as doctors, there is a level of power that you have because this is your business. This right. is your practice. You get to set the tone. And I think that if you set it with respect and you set it with compassion, it doesn't look odd, right? It's when you're uncomfortable and you can't face that discomfort that things get really weird, right?
Yeah. So when you have these situations that actually take place in the office and, you know, the patient has opened up to you because you've created that intimate relationship and that connection, what's the next step? I mean, who do you contact? Mm-hmm. Is there a resource of maybe a hotline for someone to speak to, or do you call the authorities? I mean, like, what's the next step that you basically take, you know?
Well, you absolutely can't call the authorities if they're an adult. You have to let them do that. But you can give them the number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline. You can look that up right in your exam room. I'm sure we all have the ability to do that, whether it's on our phones or on the computers that we're using for the, you know, electronic health record. I know that Social Services Department of Health and Human Services in our state has social services that really focuses on this. There is an initiative actually in North Carolina to really address domestic violence. So there are many, many different resources and many different ways that we as the physician in the room can help that patient understand that they have options. So I just pretty much start with literally, you know, those questions. And then if the answer is no, I'm not safe, then, you know, how about I give you some resources? And I want you to know that, in fact, if you actually have, if you all have ever done this, I really encourage you to do this, is to go to some of these domestic violence websites and see, like, in fact, interact. It immediately will give you like a little pop-up that says, you know, if you are not safe and you think that this is going to be watched, you can exit out of this right away. So that there's a way that they're really mindful and aware that harm can come to these people when they are looking for help. The other question actually that's really important that just came to mind as well is there a weapon in the home? Because something like 50 to 60% of homicides are done from this sort of scenario of domestic violence. Statistically, it's just really scary. So I think, and then when you look at the national statistic, that the likelihood that 25% of women in their lifetime will experience some form of domestic violence, and 8% of men, that statistic is just crazy. This is a crisis. This is a health crisis that anybody, in terms of race, ethnicity, religion, socioeconomic, can experience, right? Like, this isn't just one group of people. This isn't just this particular socioeconomic class. Yes, I mean, there's definitely disparities and there's definitely triggers and there's definitely stressors. There's definitely a lot of trauma. But I think that what we need to really be mindful of is also remembering that piece, right? Because I'll have to tell you all, I had the most eye-opening experience as an optometrist is I had a patient in my chair who was in her late 60s and dressed very designer clothing, very designer, like everything was so well put together. She's very highly educated, PhD, and she came in with signs of trauma and she opened up when I asked her what happened. And I was shocked, and yet not shocked. You know, it's kind of like, wow, okay, so just because somebody looks a certain way doesn't mean they're not at risk, and vice versa. So I think we need to be,
when we're having this conversation, I think a lot of us would be like, oh well, if I see the situation, like, definitely I'm going to do this, I'm going to report it, like, but it's a lot more difficult and a lot more challenging when you're actually in the situation. And you mentioned earlier, we had talked earlier in setting up this conversation, and I did have an experience as an extern that I still feel like I didn't do the right thing because I did nothing, right? And so that I'm going to have to live with this for forever. But I was an extern and a practice. Obviously, someone came in with an emergency. He was a child. He was under 10. High FEMA. And in having the conversation about what happened, the parent disclosed, like, oh, well, we were, you know, he was getting disciplined with a belt and we hit him in the face by mistake with the buckle. And I was like floored, horrified. And I told the doctor in charge, my preceptor, I was like, well, what do we do now? Like, we need to report this, or, you know, what happens next? Because was abused. Like, that's how this happened. And the doctor was adamant, like, that I was wrong and that's just discipline and it was an accident and all we need, there's nothing that's going to get done other than just, we'll treat the high FEMA. And I did feel like I had, you know, I was told what to do and I was here under his supervision, and it was done. Like, if I did anything more than that, I was going to be in trouble and maybe even be sent back to school and like done with my externs, right? Like, so I said, okay. And like, to this day, I feel terrible about it because that kid did not get help. And I don't know, like, what could have happened next, right? This was a one-off. This was one incident, yeah. But like, not next time, right? And yeah. I didn't know what to do. So when I asked someone for help that was in the leadership position and he said, do nothing, I was like, well, I don't know what to do that's different than nothing. So I guess we do nothing. And this comes up and you're in these situations, and if you don't fast and you don't have a plan of action, you will also do nothing. So hopefully you guys, the next time you're in the situation, you remember these things that Dr. Bescher has shared so that you know, like, yes, you do something and this is what you do.
Right. And with children, I think it's really different. Actually, we are required, actually, by law, if you suspect abuse, if you suspect that a parent or a guardian or caretaker or caregiver is harming a child that's under the age of 16, you have to report that to social services. There is no, is it or isn't it? Social services will need to go and visit and see if that's the case. But to come back and just kind of circle back to you, Jen, I feel like you did the best that you could as a student who was training and who didn't have all of the tools that you have now then. And so I think you can just forgive yourself. And I think you know that you were trying to do your best because you did go to the preceptor, because they are the ones who are supposed to be guiding you. That's why they're the preceptors. And so I think you're being a little hard on yourself. I think you will do differently the next time. Hopefully it won't happen, but you are ready. Because this has moved you to look for something different.
Yeah. I appreciate that word of support, but I just know, the statistics you shared, my experience is just one of many experiences that you guys are probably having across the country. And whether you're a student or the practicing optometrist, like, let's all just feel more empowered to do our duty and listen to what our heart is saying. Because, you know, we all have the ability to help someone if we really kind of reach down and think about what our power and benefit to society can be. And we don't have to necessarily go through authoritarian chains of command on these positions. It's easy to think that that's how it's supposed to be, because that's that relationship, but that doesn't necessarily always have to be the case. And I actually think that younger and student optometrists are way smarter about that than they've ever been before. And through social media, they've learned the power, yeah, of their own voice a lot better as a generation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would 100% say yes to that. So there's a lot of hope in young ODs really truly doing what's right for the patient and really stepping up and stepping into their, like, you know, truth about how we take care of our patients that really truly need to be served.
So we know you're doing all this great work, but we know you can't do it by yourself. So if someone wants to get involved with In Her Vision Foundation, what can they do? How can we step up to the plate to make this organization just be the best that it can be. What can we do to help and just make the world a better place? If you don't mind just sharing what our colleagues can do to step it up.
Absolutely. I love that you asked that and I appreciate it. So for us, our vision is truly to empower the community that we're serving, especially the women and the children, to live their life to its fullest potential. And so we really need, as if there's optometrists out there who are licensed in North Carolina who want to commit to helping us do these mobile exams and volunteering their time, that would be incredible and much appreciated. As the numbers grow, I alone, obviously, and the other docs who I have, can't do it by ourselves. The other thing is that if you're not an OD and you still want to help and you really want to get in there, I would love volunteers to help us do some of the pre-testing. So it's just about making the flow go in terms of the clinic. If you're interested in helping in terms of financially, you can visit our website, which is www.inhervision.org. And there's a donation page and you can help us out that way. We are working towards becoming a 501(c), which is a nonprofit. And so I'm super excited about that, as that will open up more doors, hopefully, in terms of getting some help from some of these other corporations that should definitely start to pitch into our community. So,
absolutely.
Yes, that would be lovely.
We have a lot of great organizations in North Carolina, so I'm pretty sure everyone's going to step up to the plate and do what's right. So I'm pretty sure you're not going to have any problem with getting funding. And I know something else that you're probably looking for. Any donations with equipment, I'm pretty sure, right?
If someone yes.
Definitely hit you up, because yes, and you want to be able to get out there and make this happen, and you need the equipment. Without the equipment, nothing's going to happen, right? So please, if you're listening, if you're watching, you have some equipment in your office that you're not using, or if you have access to some equipment, please donate it. It's going to a good cause. It's only going to make this world a better place and help someone see and take care of these patients, because we got to be able to reach everyone. Not everyone can come into the clinic, like we said at the top of this conversation. Sometimes we have to take the clinic to the patient. And
yes,
Vision is definitely doing this and definitely making a change in this world. So please, please support financially, with equipment, with your time. Let's make a change, you guys. You know, COVID-19 has really woke everyone up. It's time to reset and realize that we can't be selfish. We have to help the world and help other people be better and give them a better just life in general.
Yes, absolutely. And I really appreciate that, because it's really true. You did make me think about something. I thought about how Inner Vision, really the work for us is truly about giving access to vision and then really mentoring and building relationships with our patients so that we can truly help them live their life with confidence, right? So there is that mentoring piece too that comes into play as we build a relationship with our patients that we're serving. And I thought about this in terms of the smaller community that I live in, which is Durham, and then expanding that out to obviously Raleigh and Chapel Hill and Cary. And then I thought, well, why would we stop there? What if I have ODs who are out in Fayetteville or out in, like, you know, Rockingham, and they want to do this, and there's nonprofits over there that could benefit from this? Why couldn't we do this all throughout the state?
Yeah.
And I would love that, as if it was some sort of, and this is going to be such a bad analogy right now, but as if it's a wildfire, right? I just wanted to, like, the entire state has these ODs that are energized, who really want to, like, make that contact with those nonprofits that really speak to their hearts and, you know, have us come in and help. And we all work together in terms of getting these patients seen and truly taking care of different communities throughout our state. Like, how incredible is that?
Well, I'll tell you this, with your passion and with your leadership, anything is possible. That's for sure.
Thank you. Thanks, Daryl.
We talked about earlier, you know, if you guys have been feeling burnout, if you're not sure, like, do you love what you're doing? Are you enjoying it at all? Finding your reason why, it is going to give you the love back for this profession and the love for what you wake up and do every day, right? And this is more than just, clearly, this is not a North Carolina specific problem. This has happening all around the country. And if you're inspired by the conversation that we're having this evening, I mean, Dr. Besharesh is so available, such a great resource. to help answer questions on getting this going in your own states, in your own communities, in your own backyards. This can be a wildfire that's going, you know, around the world.
All over.
Because this is happening in everywhere, every community. It is not a local issue that's just happening here. So we need the support of, you know, all our dudes across the country and our friends in Canada that are listening. So we appreciate everything that you are doing to make your communities better.
Absolutely. It's, you know, people say, how can I alone make a difference? But you're not. You're not alone. You'll be so impressed by the level of support and people that come to you when you truly are doing something, like you said, Daryl, that's really, truly purpose-driven. It's like a magnet. And it's pretty incredible.
Well, for those that want to reach out to you, we know the website, but if there's a direct contact information as far as an email or social media handle, we'll love to get that information out so folks can follow you and send you messages and see how they can be more active with your organization.
Absolutely. So we are on Instagram as In Her Vision, and I can be reached at Mojgan, M-O-J-G-A-N, at inhervision.org. And that's my email. And you can send me an email. And if you're interested in whatever we've talked about tonight and you want to hear more or discuss more, please shoot me an email. I'm very open to having conversations.
Thank you guys so, so much for your time. And thank you so much for what you're doing. I know the first time I spoke with you, I knew I was going to probably get close to like crying if we did this live, and I was like right there at it. So thanks for listening to this great conversation, and I know it been inspired both of us this much. It's inspiring you as well. So go out there and do good work tomorrow, guys.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, and thank you again. I mean, just the stuff that you're doing in our industry is incredible. I mean, I get to see what you're doing behind the scenes, and now seeing this on the forefront. I just feel like I need to be doing more myself, but we greatly appreciate everything that you're doing. Keep up the good work. Everyone, thank you dearly for tuning in this evening. It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover, and my favorite opto nerd, Dr. Jennifer Lyerly. Thank you for hanging out with us this evening, and we look forward to hanging out with you guys on the next episode. You guys have a great one. Stay healthy, stay positive, and stay blessed. Peace.
Thank you. Good night.